Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. I'm obviously not Chuck, nor am I Julie. This is Mark Poff, guest hosting for them this week as they're taking Thanksgiving week off and they deserve their time off. So John St. Augustine, the very famous John St. Augustine now that his Netflix show started this morning. And you can also see Julie on that Netflix show. She is on it as well. I'm about halfway through it. I've been so busy today and I've been trying to work and watch at the same time. And I keep missing parts. So I back up and have to watch it again. I'll probably finish it up later this week. So the Netflix show is Who Killed JonBenet? This is, so far, it looks really cool. I don't want to talk about it too much right now because when John comes on in about 20 minutes or so, I'm sure I'm going to bug John about it. And we're going to talk about the Daniel Penny case. But who knows, we might get stuck on the whole JonBenet thing again. John is probably the most knowledgeable person on the case still living that didn't work for Boulder PD. But this is what I would tell you. Boulder PD are a bunch of idiots, or were definitely a bunch of idiots back then. So I would say John knew more than they did because, and if you watch that special, I think, like I said, I'm about halfway through it. I think you're going to get the sense, and I talked to one of their detective years ago at a training class in Denver. They were so infatuated with the family. They couldn't see the evidence right in front of them. There's a thing called confirmation bias, and you can Google that. And it's basically where cops come up with a theory right off the bat. And then they just gather all the evidence that they think supports their theory and ignore all the other evidence that doesn't support their theory. But I have to tell you, in the Netflix show, and I might as well say this now because John won't say a negative thing about anybody, there's a detective called Linda Arndt. She looks terrible in this miniseries, this documentary. She looks like she's freaking psycho and definitely shows signs of confirmation bias. And we can talk about that later. I think Chuck and Julie are going to agree to allow us to do on the Monday before Christmas that we could do a special just on the whole JonBenet thing, get John St. Augustine on here, ask all kinds of questions. And obviously Julie knows all about that as well. So the first part that I want to talk about, I always like to do a little political thing because I'm not a political person. And just like to talk about me as what I consider myself to be the average middle-aged conservative Republican. I've been a Republican my entire life, been pretty conservative with my views throughout my entire life, and just kind of give an average person, someone who's not into politics and all that stuff, kind of how I think and how I feel about things. So obviously this show, the Chuck and Julie Show, and if you want to call in, it's 888-627-6008. And if you raise your hand, hopefully I'll spot it if you want to say something. If you want to put in the comments, I've got the comments up so I can look at that as well. I definitely want you to add stuff. I'm going to go through some stuff here. And if you think of something that I've forgotten, I would love for you to put it up in the comments and I'll mention it as well. So hopefully we can catch everything. But I know in joining this show, now I'm a retired detective, I'm all about the facts, and it's like, don't BS me, just tell me what you're going to do. I was on a school board as the president for a while, but I was on a school board for 12 years. I understand how government works, oversight, you know, like county commissioners and all that stuff. So I kind of get an idea of politics. I ran 3 times successfully for the school board. So I think I know how to run a campaign and be a little bit political. But here's kind of the deal. I think I've always been consistent in saying not a big fan of Donald Trump. And what I mean from that is the person, Donald Trump. Sometimes when he says things, I just cringe. But his administration, I think he was abused, if you want to use that word. I think they kind of, you know, like any smart person, and I think Donald Trump is very intelligent and a great business person. I think in his first administration, he kind of got suckered by, you know, the swamp. He said he was going to drain the swamp, but guess what? Some of the Republicans were part of that swamp. And so he had to kind of feel the pain. It's kind of like almost like a first marriage. It takes a little while to figure out, you know what, this just isn't going to work. And I really feel that with Donald Trump's first administration, a lot of time got wasted trying to figure out who these yahoos were that were screwing things up in his administration. He had tons of leaks and all kinds of other stuff. And I actually think at this point, as pissed off as I was that Trump did not win back-to-back elections, I think this is going to work out better. Because we got to see Trump kind of ramping up, and I really liked the direction we were heading in. And then the whole fiasco with the election of 2020. And then the Biden administration is, I think, has just reinforced, which obviously the election proved, that, my goodness, these Democrats are idiots. They have these agendas, these social agendas of opening our border, shutting down our energy independence. They're not thinking about us. They've totally lost the working people. I consider myself a working person. I worked hard in my life and changed careers and did all kinds of things. So I consider myself a working person, even though college and other stuff like that. And these last 4 years have just been so disastrous, other than maybe the stock market, that I think now people were like, dude, we need to get back to Trump. And Trump went out there during the campaigning. And I'd love to listen to him during the campaigning, which usually I told you, I usually cringe. And it's like, yeah, you're killing me. And I really love listening to J.D. Vance. If there's been any surprise in this election for me, it's not Donald Trump. It's J.D. Vance. I love this guy. I mean, I want to hear more. I love him speaking. If I were to go to Washington, D.C., and they said, hey, you could go have a beer with whoever you wanted, I'd probably pick J.D. Vance right now or Mace. I might want to hang out with Mace. I have a feeling she parties pretty well. But, you know, I find this very interesting. So during the election season, Trump just laid it out there. Here's what I'm going to do, X, Y, and Z. And I think, you know, they kind of think that most people are stupid, the Democrats, and Kamala said nothing. I mean, it was just, to me, it was just hilarious to listen to her speak. It was brutal because she never said anything. So here's my point. And I said this very early on, if you go back, where I said, we don't owe Trump anything. He still needs to work to get the nomination, which he did. And he kicked butt during the election. So should we cut him a break that because of all these lawfare and other things that they've done against Trump, should we cut Trump a break during his administration if he doesn't back up his promises? And I'm like, no, we don't owe anything to Trump. I get that all these wrong things. And as a retired detective, I will tell you what they've done to him is absolutely wrong. I mean, they're making laws up. They're doing all kinds of stuff, but that's for another day and for another podcast. But that was a huge problem. But should we cut Trump a break from being an effective president for the next 4 years? And I'm like, absolutely not. I think he's already coming out of the gate. I mean, he's actually pre-gate. He's got all this stuff lined up. I'm very excited about a lot of this stuff that he's already got set up. So what I want to do is I went out there, did a little research. What was his promises? So I want to go through this real quick. Got them on these little cards so I can make sure that, and if I forget anything, please put them in the comment because I'm sure I forget some. So Donald Trump has promised during his campaign to end the war in Ukraine before Inauguration Day. Okay. End the war in the Middle East. I think we're already on a path for that. Secure the southern border or close the border. Build the wall. Largest deportation in history. Mass deportation. All for that. No men and women's sports. No tax on tips, overtime, or Social Security. No federal abortion ban. Extend or make permanent the 2017 tax cuts. He wants to lower the corporate tax rate even farther, down to 15%. NDEI training and programs in government institutions. Thank goodness for that. and tariffs. He's talked about tariffs. There's been a little confusion about tariffs, but he's talking about, I think what they're saying is like these 10 to 20% tariffs. And that's to make fair trade that would promote U.S. businesses. But of course, they say it's going to jack all these prices up and stuff. And I think Trump kind of promised that he's going to tax China pretty heavy, which Biden actually left those tariffs in place. And he specifically referenced trade abusers, that he's going to tariff the crap out of them. Roll back the Title IX protections for trans students. Ask Congress to require only two genders be recognized at birth. Well, there's a shocker. There is only two genders. Reduce the number of federal bureaucrats and regulations. Drill, baby, drill. Restart Keystone Pipeline. Eliminate the ban on exporting LNG, the liquefied natural gas. That's insane. That, I mean, there's so much money for us to make. And I think Canada really wants in on this as well. We could sell all kinds of liquefied natural gas to Europe and get them off of the Soviet Union or off of Russia and then bring them back to us. We can make all that money and we can put the pressure on Russia. Fire Jack Smith and his entire team. I think that's already in the works. I think Jack's going to get the hell out of Dodge long before that. And I found this very interesting. Trump, when they asked him, would you pardon everyone from January 6th? He actually said the part that I saw, he goes, it sounded like he was many of them, but not all of them, because some of them did some bad things. And this is kind of something that I'm interested in, being prior law enforcement, because there's some people that literally walked into the Capitol building, didn't touch a thing, walked right back out. And I think they got sentenced pretty tough for basically, which was nothing more than trespassing. So I think there should be a selective on who should be in prison for, you know, but that's going to be a little tricky. Dismantle the deep state, all for that. Creation of DOGE or doggy, whatever you want to call it. DOGE, everyone calls it that. That just, to me, really interests me a lot. Make America healthy again. The elimination of toxic additives and pesticides, the whole thing with RFK and putting him in there. And you know, for me, now I'm against abortion, and I am because of religious reasons. And as a retired cop, I always want to protect those that can't protect themselves, which is basically an unborn child. And I guess the big deal is that RFK is completely supports abortion. I get that. But when you got to understand what motivates Trump, Trump's a businessman. He wants to cut the deal. Like he's, you know, the book, The Art of the Deal. He knows that RFK is going to be able, he's going to be able to do some things. I really would like to listen to RFK and I'd like to see what he can do. I get that. I don't agree with him on abortion at all. I get that, but he's not in charge of that. So it's okay. Potentially. We'll see. Eliminate the climate change scam. Yeah. In lawfare, which is interesting because they were all trying to promote that he's going to go after everybody. And I think he's pretty adamant that he wants to end this whole thing with the DOJ. Declare war on drug cartels, all for that. You know, lock out the fentanyl. Enact federal law banning child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. I'm going to talk about that again here in a second. Definitely all for that. Kids can't get tattoos. Why would you let them mutilate their bodies? Cut energy costs by 50%, gasoline under $2 in 18 months, a year to 18 months. We'll see what happens. If he opens up drill, baby, drill, you're going to see huge supplies. So what's going to happen to demand? It's going to get pushed down. That's how it works. Very simple. 100% tariffs on electric cars from China/Mexico. That was the whole bloodbath thing. You know, Trump's promising that if he doesn't win, it's going to be a bloodbath. Well, if you watch the whole thing, he was talking about these electric cars that they're making down in Mexico, that China is setting up this factory and stuff. So that's what he promised. Now, I actually, when I was going through this, I found some of the crazy ones that they put out there. Trump will indict Biden and other political enemies. I don't see that happening. Biden's probably not going to. Well, they already said they're not. You can't charge Biden because he doesn't know what's going on. He has dementia. So you can't, running our country, but yeah, whatever. Trump will deport legally documented immigrants with illegals. Yeah, that's not going to happen. We'll use military against Americans who oppose him. Really? We'll invade Mexico. I think we already have with our tourism. I think it's time to come home. round up homeless and send National Guard into cities to fight crime. The way they've screwed everything up, you might need the National Guard, you know, to fight crime. We'll give RFK free reign over health agencies. I don't see that happening. He's going to implement a national abortion ban. He's adamantly said numerous times he's not interested in that. Bring back the death penalty. I didn't know it was gone. Enact Project 2025. How many times have we heard this? How many times? And actually, I've read some of the things. Some of the things sound like some pretty good ideas. So I personally don't see what the big deal is. Restrict voter rights. Well, where do you see that? We had more people voting this time than any other election. He will make stuff more expensive through the tariffs. We heard that. We'll reevaluate America's participation in NATO. What's wrong with that? Seems like we've been carrying the load. Maybe it's time to make things fair. We'll flood the nation with guns, go after non-MAGA media, threaten the First Amendment. I think he's more, that's crazy talk. And codify discrimination against trans Americans. I don't see that either. So that's the things that I've heard. And let me see if there's anything. Yes to tariffs. I agree completely. Had a single partisan bone among the, okay. 15% corporate tax rate would take us out of the, I love the corporate. I mean, here's the bottom line with corporate profits. They hand it out to the stockholders and stuff anyway. So you're going to double tax them anyway. You know what I'd really like to see with the January 6th? I'd like to see them open everything up. I want to know who from the federal government was inside that, like FBI agents or narcs, as we call them, that actually stimulated or encouraged people to go into the Capitol building. I've seen some videos. I would like to see a full investigation, but not the rigged one that we saw. I'd like to know what the government, I'd like to know, you know, Nancy Pelosi was offered all these law enforcement and National Guard and stuff, and she turned it down, and it's her job. So, so more about the January 6th. All right, so here's my deal. This is me. This is going to take me a few more minutes, and then we'll get John in here. He's not even on yet, so it doesn't matter. This is what I want. Average American. This is my top 10 list right here. Top 10 list of what I'd like to see Donald Trump do during his administration. And then I have a small list of what I think he can do on day one. So this is it to me. Number 10 that I would like to see happen during Donald Trump's administration. So this is like David Letterman, my top 10 list for the Trump administration. Like anybody cares what I want. Fix Congress. I put this pretty low on my list because I just don't see it happening. Yearly budget. We haven't had a yearly budget approved by Congress in years. Stop paying Congress if they don't get it by when they're supposed to. And don't pay them back. Don't reimburse them after they, like, we're going to go through this again right here in a few weeks where they're like, oh, we got to come up with another continuing whatever it is. I'm like, you know what? Stop paying them. If they're not going to do their job, and their first job is to come up with a yearly budget. And fix it. End all congressional pensions. Look, being in Congress is a temp job. It's not a full-time job. You should only be there, maybe full-time, but it's only a temporary job. There should be term limits. There should be zero pension. So right now, it's my understanding that if you get one full term in Congress, you get your salary 100% for the rest of your life. Where's that deal anywhere? So why would they get a deal like that? As far as I'm concerned, no pension. You serve your years. You get a 401k just like everybody else. Give them a really good one. Make it nice. Matching, 20%, whatever you want to call it. Give them a nice, good salary. But when they're done, they get the hell out with no pension. We shouldn't have to keep paying for these morons for the rest of their lives because they served one full term. That's just crazy. And when I say fix Congress, no bill should be over 20 pages. If you have to write a bill that's 400, 500, 600 pages long, it's too complicated, throw it out. Every bill that they look through should be a maximum of 20 pages. All right, going to have to speed this up or I'll be here all day. Stop all foreign aid that does not support U.S.'s agenda. Why we just hand out money to foreign countries when we're struggling here and we've got people we need to take care of, especially like in North Carolina right now. So just stop it. And guess what you could do with that money that you're spending on foreign people that hate us, for one thing? Maybe you could use it to deport illegal aliens. So now you get some money. Protect females and children from those who wish to exploit or harm them. Federal ban on identity-affirming surgeries under 18. No men in women's sports or in female places. Okay, that didn't sound right, but you know what I mean. This is the thing that Congresswoman Mace was heavy on. I agree with her 100%. You got to feel safe in certain areas where you should be feeling safe. Females should not have to be concerned about competing in sports events and getting their asses kicked by a male who's dressed up like a girl. That's just not, it's not right. Reduce the size of federal government, reduce fraud and waste. Real simple. I don't see that happening. Rewrite tax laws to include no taxes on Social Security tips. Reduce the number of IRS agents and no armed IRS agents. I don't know if you know this right now, but the IRS is kind of building up their own police force, federal agents. They don't need it. It's just a waste. Number five, fix the healthcare system to include Social Security, making it financially sound. To me, that's important. I'm 4 or 5 years away from getting Social Security. Number four, now we're getting to the big four. These four need to happen during the Trump administration. And I'm going to judge Trump, which I think we should all be judging Trump and his administration to see if he can get these items accomplished. This is what's important to me. Mass deportation, number four. Deport every illegal alien to include their children. Create federal task force from ICE agents and HSI. Homeland Security is the biggest boondoggle on the planet. Take all of those agents that are all over the nation that are working on projects and cases that have nothing to do with Homeland Security, and let's just take them all and let's search for and prosecute human traffickers with that task force. Place tariffs and sanctions on all countries that won't take their citizens back. This is so simple. I mean, when they sit there and go, oh, well, there's no way we can turn these people to Venezuela. They won't take them back. The hell they won't. No money to Venezuela. Complete sanction. Venezuela's out. We don't do business with nothing. Zip, zero, nada. They'll start taking them back the next day. So here's another thing. You know, everyone wants to, they don't want to see these images of, you know, kids in cages and all that stuff. I just want to run this little scenario through you. If you were to take your three-year-old child, go down to Texas and start cross into Mexico on the Rio Grande and then cross back. So you start crossing back into Texas on the Rio Grande through that dangerous river, and you're carrying this 2 to 3 year old child across. And then when the border agents, you know, help you out of the water and they're like, you know, who are you? You're not Mexican. What's going on? And you're like, oh, I'm a U.S. citizen. I just wanted to have the adventure, like all these immigrants that are sneaking in, of taking my child, my 2 or 3 year old child, across the Rio Grande River. I just thought that would be so exciting. They would arrest you for child abuse. They would take your child from you because what you just did was child abuse. But so if you're not a U.S. citizen, they welcome you with open arms and they help you and then they ship you out of whatever city you want to go to. But if you were a U.S. citizen, you would probably go to jail immediately. We can do the mass deportation. And the other scam, that the thing that they're trying to sell you, which is not true, is the fact that it's cheaper to just let them stay than it is to deport them. Total lie. It is much cheaper to find them, deport them, get them out, and don't spend any more money on them. And if they come back, put them in jail. Problem solved. Stop federal funding to sanctuary cities or states or whatever. This is actually a lot easier than I think a lot of people understand. When I worked on a school board during the Obama administration, they forced on us this federal school lunch program. They said, if you want to get this funding from the feds, you've got to serve the free and reduced lunch to the certain children, and it has to be the way we want it to be. Our nutritionist came in and briefed the board and said, this lunch that they want to feed the kids is high carbs, low protein. It's not good for the kids. It's actually bad for the kids. So we as a school board said, how much would it cost for us to just do that and just forget about the federal funding? And they gave us a number and we said, fine, let's do that. Because you know what's more important than getting free funding from the government? It's doing the right thing for kids. So the bottom line is you can say, if you want federal funding for this, you have to follow the rules. You can do that. Now, there's so much when they talk about we're not going to help with these mass deportations because we don't believe in that. So we're not going to aid ICE agents and stuff. That's a total farce. There's so many task forces that are integrating local law enforcement with federal agents with tons of funding. You start yanking that funding, they're going to say, yeah, we need to help them out because we need that money. Jails get money from this type of stuff. So the mass deportation, I'm very excited about watching that play out. Number three, and obviously this has to be above the mass deportation, is you got to secure the border. I mean, you got to secure the border first, then you can start doing the mass deportations. Doing it in the reverse order doesn't really make a lot of sense. And we should have immediate deportation. If somebody comes across the Rio Grande or however, and when I say secure the borders, I also mean the port of entries. A lot of people are getting in through airports and other means and not actually sneaking up through the southern border. But as soon as they come across, you arrest them and you deport them without a hearing. I mean, if they can very quickly say, here's, you know, I'm for some reason, why I'm here, that's two, and the Canadian border, I agree completely. But this is what should happen, is as soon as they come across, we capture them, we put them and hold them, we fingerprint them, we make sure that, you know, nutrition, if there's kids. Look, for some of these situations, it's better for the kid to take them. If they can't prove that they're the parent of that kid, why would we put them back with the coyote? But we should put them on a bus, drive them right across the bridge, and say, thanks, you're gone. Immediately. There should be no hearings, no nothing. So that was number three. Number two, as the importance to me, and maybe this should probably be five, but energy independence. I think this is so critical with our country that I think it's a security thing, and we need to be exporting all this stuff. We need to be driving the world market on energy. This means turning the Keystone Pipeline back on, new refineries, and guess what? Nuclear reactors. We can try to dodge this ultimate clean energy thing. Windmills and solar panels are just not going to cut it. If you want power, consistent power 24/7, the only thing that we know as of right now with technology are nukes. And I don't understand why everyone is arguing, you know, that we can't do nukes. That's crazy talk. We can set some nukes up and generate a lot of energy and do it safely. Okay, so that's my number one, which nobody has mentioned anything else. No one's mentioned this. And this is like my big, huge pet peeve. The people not in power constantly make this an issue. And then as soon as they get into power, it's no longer an issue. Donald Trump's not talking about this. The Dems aren't talking about this. But I guarantee you, as soon as Trump gets into power or his administration, the Democrats are going to start bringing this up again. And it just keeps going back and forth. And nobody ever does anything about it. Well, this is the most important thing. And Donald Trump, I would like to see deal with this, is he's got to balance the budget. We have got to have a balanced budget. And we got to start whittling away at the national debt. You can talk about this. You can do whatever you want about this, but it seems like nobody's serious about doing anything about it. So that's my list of any promises. If I've missed anything, I definitely agree with the comments and stuff that I'm seeing here. Nuclear is safe today. They actually can generate these little baby nukes and all kinds of, I mean, hell, we put them in warships. I mean, warships are traditionally not a safe place. So why can't we have nuclear reactors in very safe places? Even the one in Japan that got all jacked up, there was no huge, I mean, there was some issues. I'm thinking it's probably not smart to put a nuclear reactor right on the edge of salt water. Not the smartest thing. but I'm pretty sure that we can do it pretty smart. But we've got to balance the budget. So this is what I'd like to see Trump do on day one. I got to hurry up here. I don't see if John's on here yet. I might have to text him and tell him to get on. He should have been on about 5-10 minutes ago. This is what I'd like to see in day one of his administration. I'm doing too much talking. I want him to declare an emergency on the border, close it down, and restart building the wall. Obviously, the wall does work. Start mass deportation, day one. Restart Keystone, day one. Protect our women, our girls in sports, day one. So the two things that I think are going to happen, and then I guess I got to figure out how to get John on here, man, or this is going to be a pretty quick show. I think you will see, I'd be willing to bet so much money. And I'm not a gambler, but I think I would bet a lot of money. Hunter Biden is going to get a pardon. I mean, Joe Biden is going to pardon him. There's just no doubt in my mind at all that he's going to pardon him. And I predict that if in 2026, in the midterms, if the Dems take over the House, they'll at least impeach Trump once, maybe even twice. So I see that happening. I'm going to text John here real quick. See, we got that technology. They have a verdict and I'm listening in. Any issues if I'm on around 3:40? Oh, so I told you. So here, I can just keep bloviating. So he did text me. I'm going to text him back. Look, you can see a little, you know, okay, but no later. All right. So John is currently going through a homicide trial and they got a verdict. And I'm very interested, you know, he may be in a good mood or not. We'll just have to see if he's willing to talk about this when he comes on here in about 5-10 minutes. So Hunter, wait a minute, list all 100 crimes in the pardon. You know, that's a very interesting point. Jim, it's Jim, right? You know, I think that may be why Joe Biden's waiting on the pardon. It'll probably be like the last day or two. And, oh, he's coming in now. He might wait till the end because he needs to I mean, how can you list something that hasn't been? See, I don't know the whole process real well. There's probably others here that do know the process. But, I mean, I could see Joe Biden, you know, all crimes committed before this date, all federal crimes committed before this date, I pardoned Hunter Biden. I could see that. And what the excuse he's going to use, I can so nail this. This is so easy. It's baby, it's child's play. He's going to say, I don't trust Trump. Trump's going to go after with his DOJ. He's going to go after my son and I've got to protect my family. And I wasn't planning on pardoning him, but you know, seeing that Trump won, I know he's not going to get a fair deal. You know, it'd be, well, I think it'd be funny if Trump actually pardoned him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and everything. So John's still stalling here, man. We have a caller. Oh, please give me a caller so we can stall time on that. Sherry, talk to me.
Hi. I actually had a couple kind of questions on the JonBenet thing, so maybe I could just run them by you.
Well, just throw them out here. Maybe John will get interested and actually speak up. But I'm interested. Okay. Talk to me.
Okay. So I don't hear much about the fact that JonBenet's grandfather on John Ramsey's side in North Fox Island, he was the planning, construction, and operation of the, it's called Charlevoix and North Fox Island airstrips. And that was initiated and supervised by JonBenet's paternal grandfather, James Dudley Ramsey. But that island is really interesting because in the 70s, little underprivileged boys were flown to isolated island.
PR2220, People versus Santana.
John, you need to mute, buddy. So that's very interesting, you know, because we get
Yeah,
this
and so
stuff.
anyway, they were sexually abused, right? They were
Right.
molested, and they took movies and photographs of these boys and distributed them. And that child pornography ring was discovered in the 70s, and that money was laundered through the same Caribbean banks that Jeffrey Epstein was connected with. And John Ramsey owns a summer home. They used to visit there all the time, right across the water from that island. And JonBenet, I mean, she won a beauty pageant and stuff there. And you never hear very much about that.
I don't know anything about it. And John tried to pop on, but then that's what that other noise was, is the judge just so he's listening to the verdict remotely. So he just told me, well, he's actually, I think he sent it to everyone. The verdict is coming in. So we'll have to wait. That'll be kind of interesting to see if John knows anything about that. That I find that very interesting. So John Ramsey's father
Father.
was not a good person.
Well, I don't know that, but he initiated and supervised the construction, the operation, the planning, everything on those airstrips. And they would
Interesting.
fly from where John Ramsey's house, the Charlevoix, to the North Fox Island. But on that island, it was a huge pornography ring,
Yeesh.
pedophile pornography ring, and they would fly little underprivileged kids there for a camp, to go for a camp, but then they'd make the movie. So it just seems kind of an interesting thing because of John Ramsey's. There was actually some stuff brought out about him that somebody had made an accusation against him, but people make accusations. Nancy Cribbs was the lady that accused John Ramsey of producing child pornography. So I just
Well, I
thought it
will.
was kind of an interesting thing.
It is an interesting twist. I mean, we get all of these coincidences, if you want to call it that. And I'm sure John, hopefully he'll know something about it. I have to tell you, I found out many years later that my uncle was not a good person. And I didn't even know this. He lived back in, him and his family were back in Tennessee. And now with the internet, you have access to so much information that we didn't have, 30, 40 years ago. And I was, finding this stuff out about my uncle and his kids. And it's like, that's not good. They're not representing the family very well here. But so let
Right.
me, was there something? Because here's the deal. And I don't want you to, I hope. And I know Julie. I've known Chuck and Julie for years, and I just think the world of them. I'm pretty sure I've got them convinced on the 23rd of December, if they're going to do a show, which I'm pretty sure they're going to, do a whole show on the whole JonBenet thing and talk about that. Now, John, you just turned your video on. Are you good?
I am.
All right, can we
Okay,
bring
I'm going to
John
hang
in?
up then.
Well, you don't have to hang up, but so do you know the question that she just asked?
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Is there issues with like John Ramsey's father? And actually, Sherry, if you're still on, maybe you can give him a quick, refresher here.
Apparently, John Ramsey's father, he was he supervised the planning, construction, and operation on the airstrips that were going from Charlevoix to North Fox Island. North Fox Island apparently is a real remote little island that you can see from Charlevoix. And in the 70s, they used to fly these little underprivileged boys over there for boys camp. But what they were actually doing is molesting them, sexually abusing them, and then they were taking movies and photographs. And those were distributed, the pornography was distributed, and it went through the same banks, the Caribbean banks that Jeffrey Epstein was connected with. And John Ramsey owns a house in Charlevoix, which looks right over at Fox Island where this was going on. JonBenet won a beauty pageant down there. So you just don't hear very much about that. Actually, very little.
I have no idea about
Yeah, I never
any of
heard
that.
about it.
Yeah. I mean, I know that they had a house in Charlevoix, but I'm not sure about the link about the the link between that and this island. Never heard of it.
But so, Sherry, you did your own investigating, looking into
Well,
this?
you like you said, you do some research on the webs, the internet, and
Right.
but there's a lot of information on James Dudley Ramsay because he was a
Interesting.
pretty important guy on there. He wasn't connected for they're not connecting him with the pornography, but
Right.
he was working there, living there, and very important that those airstrips,
Interesting.
could. So
Well,
anyway.
hey, definitely on the 23rd of December. Make sure you listen to the podcast live. And I think we're going to do this. I'm going to try to talk Chuck and Julie into doing a whole show because the Netflix, again, it's called Who Killed JonBenet. So if you have Netflix, go, binge watch it tonight, get some bourbon or whatever and ice cream and watch the show. I've watched about half of it. John is like the main character in the whole thing. He's driving the whole documentary. And
Yeah, sure.
Julie, obviously Julie's in it a lot. So I think you'll like it. Then we can talk about JonBenet and all these, hopefully new things that were coming out with JonBenet. I find it very interesting. It's probably, John, wouldn't you think it's like probably one of the biggest mysteries of the United States? I mean,
Yeah, I mean, it's a case that's been around for what, almost 3 decades, and we're not any closer today than we were 28 years ago regarding, who did it. So I think a lot of people have maybe taken a side, right? Whether you believe the family did it or you didn't believe the family did it. But yeah, I mean, it's a case that continues to, draw interest. I mean, I will tell you, people are still, if you know anything about true crime or follow true crime, I should say, a lot of people still follow the JonBenet Ramsey case.
right? I mean, it's huge. I mean, and we, John and I both worked on Tom Clements, which really should be the biggest homicide that's ever been in the state of Colorado, because he was the head of the Department of Corrections and he was assassinated on his front steps. And you'd think something like that, but when you talk about a little child, everybody's imaginations just go crazy and it just becomes this national thing. But it is what it is. So, hey, so did you get your news?
Yeah, not good. Not
Well,
good.
not
Yeah.
good for that person,
But
but
no, you're right. Not good
I
for the
mean,
person. Exactly.
like I always
Yeah.
say, John and I have nothing to do with the verdicts at all. I think we're more of, and especially John more than even more than myself, we're going to make sure the cops and law enforcement play fair. That they don't bend the rules, they don't skip things, they're not lazy, and things like that. But the whole judicial system is what it is. And we're just a small little piece of that puzzle that I want to say before we did this, we both retired 10 years ago, that there really wasn't people like us in the state of Colorado that could go in there and say, hey, especially John, who can go into a courtroom and say, this is how an investigation should be run. And that's all it is. I mean, there's still evidence. It is what it is. But so we've got, maybe 10 minutes or so, maybe 15 or whatever. So I actually don't want to talk about JonBenet at this point because I want to wait for Julie, let her watch the Netflix show and everybody watch it and stuff, and then we can discuss it next month. So, and I'm monitoring my laptop to see if anything comes out about the Daniel Penny case. And John admitted to me we actually had lunch together. We try to do lunch every so often, but it's been a while. But we both ended up down by the office today, which is pretty rare. And we were talking about the Daniel Penny case, and I have been watching it from the beginning, and John actually has not. John's a lot busier than I am working on all these cases, and I just thought it was crazy from the beginning, and it, to me, it reinforces how district attorneys have too much power. And so what happens? I mean, quick scenario is Daniel Penny is riding the subway with a bunch of other people in New York City. An individual gets on the subway, and you know what? I can't remember the guy's name. And he just...
The guy's name is Jordan Neely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the guy gets on here. He's supposed to be a Michael Jackson impersonator, but he's homeless. He's had tons of history of mental illness. In fact, they just released, I guess, the last day of the trial, that he had actually had a bench warrant for not failure to show up in court on another case. And he's been charged with assaults on the subway before. So this guy's got history. Not that anybody on the subway knew him specifically, but pretty much from what I saw in the testimony or heard in on the media, and of course, got to take that with a grain of salt, is he scared the crap out of everybody. He got on there and he started acting up. Looked like he was going to start assaulting kids that were actually on there and women and stuff. He said, I don't care if I go back to prison or jail or whatever. He goes, you know, I don't care if I kill someone. And he was making all these threats. And multiple people who testified said, I thought I was going to get hurt or get killed by this guy. I was very scared. And so I don't think that really helps the prosecutor much in that situation. But they do have footage of Neely, or not Neely, of Mr. Penny talking with the cops afterwards before he even knew that Neely had passed away, where he said, you know, I didn't really want to hurt this guy or kill this guy. He was just, I did it to protect the other people on that subway car. And that's it. And, you know, if you understand the law about, you know, they charged him with manslaughter, and I guess they also can convict him of criminal negligent homicide. Of course, I don't understand how that really applies. I'm not sure anything. Well, I guess it would be negligent to put him in a headlock, but they know he was alive when they let him out of the headlock. They had a pulse or whatever, and he died later on. I don't know how much later. They brought a pathologist in who said he didn't die from the chokehold. He died from all the drugs and the chokehold and a condition he had. So, I you know, any thoughts, John, from reviewing this afternoon or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, the question, right? I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, Mark. Like, the prosecutor's role is to seek justice, right? And in this situation, you know, at least on the surface, because we weren't sitting in the trial every day and we're kind of, you know, getting, you know, some information from what's being released from media and such, you know, the real question is whether or not Mr. Penny, you know, had any intent, or, you know, knowingly or by his actions knew that he was going to kill this guy. From, you know, what it sounds like is that there were a number of people who were concerned for their own safety, and he, you know, acted out to just ensure that, right, that everyone was safe. I mean, it wasn't as if he drew a gun or stabbed this guy. He placed him in a hold, which, you know, I think it'll probably get down to, you know, I don't know if there was testimony, Mark, about his training in the military of this is how, you know, you would subdue somebody. I mean, I will tell you from a law enforcement perspective, right, we're not taught to do any kind of chokeholds, but I will tell you, I mean, we are taught that if, you know, you're in a life-threatening situation, that, you know, essentially you have to do what you have to do, right? I mean, you know, it's always easy for us to sit here and second guess the actions of an individual, especially a civilian individual, right? It's always easier to second guess the actions of a police officer because we normally have the luxury of body worn cameras and things of that sort. But when you take into account, right, that our best evidence is probably the witnesses who were there, who felt threatened by Mr. Neely, right? Then, you know, is this guy, you know, just acting out to protect, right? Protect himself and other people. I mean, I will tell you, if the role had been reversed, what if it would have been a cop who was there and did some kind of hold that resulted in his death? Then would we have the same kind of charges filed? I venture to guess that, you know, who knows? I mean, probably not. But you know, my position on this is, you know, if in fact, right, these witnesses felt threatened by Mr. Neely's actions, that you know their life was in danger, or they were, you know, that there was potentially serious bodily injury, then, you know, I think his actions were justified. And I think that's why. How long has the jury been out, Mark? Just today?
Just today, really. I think they got it late on Friday. Oh,
Yeah.
wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know what? I'm jacked. They have the whole week off. So I'm sitting here saying how I'm going to
Oh,
monitor this. The
right.
judge gave them the whole week off, which is, I think, a very good idea. So there is no, this week we're off, which is interesting because, you know, they're going to have a whole week. They're going to go, some of them are going to spend Thanksgiving with their relatives, and they're all going to know, you know, hey, Uncle Bob is
Oh,
on the
yeah.
jury or whatever.
Right.
It's going to be hard for people not, you know,
Not to talk about it.
not to
You know,
talk
they're
about
given
it and
they're
not to
given
look on
that
the internet
admonition. Yeah,
and
they're given that
everything.
admonition right before they leave that they're not
Right.
supposed to do their own research. They're not supposed to talk to anybody else about the case until there's a verdict. But, you know, letting people off for a week. You know, I think you think it's a good idea. For me, it'd been like, you know what, let's get this thing resolved. Is, you know, hopefully we can get it resolved before the Thanksgiving break. But I think having that whole week off, I mean, people are curious, right? We're curious by nature. And I think what you're going to find out is nobody's going to admit that they did any research.
Right.
And so, right, they're gonna do their own homework because nobody's going to be checking their phones and their computers to see if they're actually doing any kind of research on Mr. Penny or Mr. Neely. So, you know, who knows? My preference would have been to just have them deliberate and, you know, hopefully they can come back with a verdict sooner than later.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously
get
it
it done
rules
before
out, you know,
Thanksgiving.
what's that?
Yeah, I'd kind of like to get some closure before Thanksgiving.
Right.
So then when I do meet with family, I can actually talk about the case, you know, and just get, you know, answer their questions like, nope, can't talk about that. Can't talk
Right.
about
And
that. And I
is it true, Mark, that they're not ruling in the premeditation after deliberation? They're not bringing into play the knowingly part, second degree,
no. It's the only
strictly
thing I
manslaughter
think that's up is manslaughter and
or
criminally negligent
negligence?
homicide, which is basically manslaughter and involuntary manslaughter. So
Right.
what they need is reckless, is what he did n reckless
Right.
is going to be really the definition of the whole thing. So that kind of really lowers the bar down to a point where there could be some people on a jury just saying, well, he didn't knowingly kill this guy, but is the action he took by putting this individual in a chokehold, was that reckless? I would venture to say the people that were on that subway that basically were saved by Mr. Penny, they would say, yeah, it was needed, because
Right.
I'm not sure we would have gotten off that subway, all of us, you know, if he hadn't have done that.
Right. You know what I wonder is there something maybe in his training background that you know, he was counseled or disciplined for something for, you know, the use of a particular hold, or if he has any kind of history, you know, again, right? I mean, you know this, right? Every time we investigate something, one of the first questions we always ask is, you know, does this person have any prior criminal history? So, you know, it doesn't sound like there is one involving Mr. Penny, but, you
No,
know,
no,
if
no.
they
But
did that
he
way.
has, but he they brought an instructor in that actually trained Mr. Penny, and he said that he was trained on doing chokeholds and different kinds of chokeholds. And then he even said in watching the video, he said what kind of chokehold it was, and you know, that kind of stuff. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that a paleontologist, is that right? Not a pathologist came in and said, look, he didn't die from the chokehold. And see, we know things like, even, you know, and I don't really want to bring up George Floyd, but we knew there was more to his death than just meets the eye, you know, because when you bring drugs that affect your heart and other systems, whenever you're put into a high stress scenario, your body's going to react differently. They know
Sure.
this. There's positional and asphyxia and all kinds of other things that can actually come into play. So the thing is they got to understand the intent of Mr. Penny. If in his mind, he's saving everybody on the subway, that's a big fat not guilty.
Right.
You know, I mean, if he really felt that his life or someone else's life was threatened, with death or serious bodily injury, he's justified in doing what he did. It's just that simple. Sure. So the question is, does the jury feel that the people, I think they should let the people on the subway vote, you know?
Yeah.
I think they'd be like, I was scared crapless, man. You know, I think the guy saved us all. It's going to be a big, huge not guilty. But here's the political thing. And I don't think I know you don't play the political game. I just get the feeling that these liberal DAs, they don't want us to have guns to protect ourselves, to where we can concealed carry, that if somebody, you know, so we walk down a street that they're not maintaining our safety, that we can't do it ourselves. So we can't carry a gun, can't carry a concealed knife or whatever. So then you have somebody who's, you know, was in the military. I think he was a Marine, who sees a situation where everybody's at risk. And because of his training, he gets involved and protects everybody. They don't like that. They want us to be sheep, to where, you know, they're letting these people out with $0 bonds. This guy should have been in prison or in jail. They know that now. That came out at the end of the trial. You know, they know he had large amount, or he had mental illness, and he shouldn't have been on the streets. You know, so the bottom line is, the streets of New York are not safe. I ain't going there right now. It's not going to happen. It's not safe, and they won't protect us, and they won't let us protect ourselves. So, I see the time is getting a little late here. So wrap it up there, John. I think we got like a minute left.
We'll see what happens. But I mean, you know, I agree with you. I think his actions, it appears, are justified, you know. And I mean, what bothers me is if the science behind it, right, the forensics, you got a forensic pathologist that's saying that, you know, that the result of the death was not caused by the choking, then, you know, you sure have to bring into question what he had in his bloodstream, what prior issues he had, and how you can, you know, put this whole thing on Mr. Penny. You know, this is a prime example of how, you know, people get charged with crimes that, you know, people go, where did that come from? And it's happening, unfortunately, more and more. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, we're leaving, we give too much power, as you said, to prosecutors, where they have absolute immunity. They can do whatever they want to do to whoever they want, whenever they want, and they really don't have to answer to anybody. And that's the problem. Right. I think we need to really reevaluate how our criminal justice system is designed. It's you know, there's a lot of issues that I think need to be addressed, and we need to take away at a minimum the absolute immunity that prosecutors have, because they're allowed to do things with impunity, things like this, where, you know, a person is acting out in good faith to protect other individuals, other innocent people, and he's the one that gets in trouble for something, you know, that went on. And we're not even talking, Mark, about the financial strain that is possibly on this guy, Mr. Penny, right? I mean,
I think they cranked him out a bunch of money with a GoFundMe account, so I think he's okay with that.
Right. Well, that's good.
I mean, you, if anybody knows, the financial burden of having to defend yourself from completely false allegations made by a DA who's basically not following the law and is being vindictive.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. We kind of, thanks for coming on there, John, at the end.
Yeah. Sorry, I was a little late.
Yeah. But you know, life happens.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't bore everyone too much, but I'm really hoping that Donald Trump gives us a balanced budget and secures our borders and all the other promises he gave us. And I'm comfortable he's going to give it a dang good shot. So have a great Monday. You'll see Chuck and Julie back next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. See you later.
See you.